Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, a podcast focused on the local Twin Ports running scene. My name is Tony Stensland with Tony Stensland Coaching.
And I am Mike Ward with Duluth Timing and Events.
All right, quick thank you before we get started to our sponsor of this episode, Austin Jarrow, Duluth's original running store. That's the place to get your running shoes. Great advice from all the people that work up there. Check out their website, austin-jarrow.com. They are also on Facebook and Instagram. Drive on up to their location on Central Entrance, just on the other side of where the Home Depot is, but on the other side of the road. Or give them a call, 218-722-1185. Thanks so much to Austin Jarrow. All right. Welcome, everyone, to episode number 85 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. I feel like it's been a long time since our last podcast. It hasn't been super long. We've had bigger gaps before, but to me, it feels like it was like 3 months ago almost since we last podcasted.
I feel like the day across Minnesota will make one feel like they've lived a lifetime.
That's probably what it was. Yeah, it was just like that massive, like Grand Canyon sized event in the middle of my summer that caused a big
maybe gap, healthy dose of sleep deprivation.
Yeah,
there too.
Yeah, that was an insane race this year.
Yeah, we maybe have to hear a little bit more about that later on. But should we jump right in the race results here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, got a couple in no particular order. Let's start with the Park Point 5 miler. This was on July 17th. New course record for men. Lars DeWall took the win with a 24:12. And then Shaylin Hostager, I'm mispronouncing. Shaylin, sorry. 29:09. We had 501 finishers in the 5 mile run this year.
Yeah, that course record, by the way, I mean, that thing stood for a long time. So just someone to finally break that. Pretty cool. Steve Hoag, who had that course record.
I think that was 3 seconds too.
Yeah.
It was a 3 seconds rate.
Yeah. It was
like really cool.
Yeah.
Tight.
Yeah.
Next we have results coming in from an inaugural 5K.
Kind of inaugural. They used to do it a handful of years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's come back.
It's come back.
Yeah.
Okay. Newer race that used to be old. Will Johnson took the win with
the Run with the Hounds 5K.
Yeah. Yep. Which was out at Snowflake this year. 17:31 for Will. And the first place in the female division, I can't see.
Stella Powell.
Stella Powell. Yeah, 14th overall with a 19:51. So nice there. Do you any commentary on the race? How did it go, Tony?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was we had a little over 80 people there, so it was a good turnout, and the weather was really good. Trail conditions were really nice. The good people at Snowflake mowed down the course for us. We went out and marked any kind of roots and rocks and things that somewhat get hidden in the grass. So nobody got hurt or turned an ankle or anything out there. It was a really good day.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Next, another trail race. We got results coming in from the Voyager 50-mile trail ultra marathon. Hot day out there. Jacob Wortman, Duluthian, took the win with a 7:40 and 34 seconds. On the gal side, Lauren Mitchell took the win with an 8:23:12. I believe Lauren was fourth overall as well. Sixth overall out of Afton, Minnesota. Let's see, 148 finishers don't have the start list, but tough day out there at the Voyager. I'm not sure if this is an inaugural event or not. The Essentia Health Iron Range Half Marathon and 5K. I don't remember really hearing about that, but figured I'd pull it up with a couple of fast times on the books here. Nick Thomas, 28 years old, won the men's division with a 1:14:39, and then Alyssa Peterson, 26 years old, took the women's crown with a 1:29:18. 166 finishers for the half marathon, and we had 81 finishers in the 5K version out in Virginia, Minnesota. Again, no particular order here, so sorry for jumping around chronologically, but we have results streaming in from the Carlton Days 5K. Scott Olson took the win here for men with a 39.10, and then Tani Bushi with a 47.01 took the win on the female side. That was walk results, excuse me. Jackson Lindquist with a 15.42. It looks a little more accurate for a winning 5K time. Nice work, Jackson. Emily Oleziak took the win on the gal side, 18.55. So 171 finishers in the Carlton Days. More 5K results here. We have a lot of races, of course, in our peak kind of race season, July. The Chief France Red Run 5K, that's in Rice Lake, Minnesota, just adjoining Duluth here. Jeremiah Judd took the win here, 18 years old with a 17.44. Elsie Juton took the win on the gal side, 20 minutes and 14 seconds. We had 118 finishers in the Chief France Red Run. And then last results that we have here, the Kristen Burkholder 5K. This was on August 9th here, so earlier in the month. Phoenix Anderson won the men's race with a 17.23. Emily Oleziak, another win, 18.49 on the gal side. 185 finishers out in Esco. So a lot of races. If we've missed one, send us an email. Let us know. Actually, I'm not seeing results exactly, but we did get a note from a local runner and a local race director, Jeffrey Burns, about the Lost Forester runs out in Cloquet at Pine Valley. Mm-hmm. So that happened yesterday. We just missed a shout out. We're kind of in this weird zone where we don't have results and we don't have a we don't have results and we don't have a can't shout it out, obviously. Or maybe we do have results. Ah, we do. Sorry about that. Yeah, so Tom Anderson from Cloquet, he won the 12.5 mile, 2 hours, 23 seconds. Top female, Hermione Voice, out of Hopkins, 22, 2 hours, 31. And then in the 5.5K, Joe Fournier out of Proctor took the win, 28.40. And then second place overall, first place female, Elizabeth Austin Miner from Duluth, 29 minutes and 3 seconds. So we do have results streaming in after all from the Lost Forester runs of Pine Valley on ultrasignup.com. So sorry we missed the shout off, Jeffrey, but thanks for sending the note. Just a little bit about the Lost Forester. It's a benefit for a charity called the Blue House Uganda. So, it's kind of a neat mystery distance, kind of bushwhacking, orienteering mixed with trail running. Mm-hmm. So if that sounds like your vibe, put that on the calendar for next year. Let's see, upcoming races. We have a lot. Sorry, probably getting sick of my voice here, but we have in no particular order, and I didn't write down dates, so we just have to... If you want to learn more, you got to do some research, people. Sorry. The Minnesota Mile is coming up. That is a one-mile run. It's put on by Grandma's Marathon. Probably the premier one-mile race in the whole area, right? I mean...
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. So that's a really fun one. Also coming up is the North Shore Inline Marathon and Run, including inline skating races. Of course, there are running options. Through the Tunnels, pretty cool course, half marathon, 10K. I think those are just the two at this point, distance-wise. Women's only race is coming up that is put on by Duluth Running Company, the Duluth Women's 10-mile towards the end of September, I believe. We have Superior Fall Trail races going on up in Lutzen, mm-hmm. Some ultra-marathon stuff. Pike Lake Fall Fun Run 5K, never heard of that, but found it on the internet. That's going on September 20th on the Pike Lake area. Very next day, if you're looking to do a couple 5Ks in a row, the Aruna Run, I believe that's at UMD, and that's on mm-hmm. September 21st. Some other races, Grand Traverse is towards the end of September. That is a trail running event here locally in Duluth. And also the Cloquet River Run, 5 mile and five, excuse me, 5K and 1 mile distances there. So a little bit of everything for everyone coming up in the next month or two here in Duluth. So, and again, if we've missed any, if you want to shout out your race, send us an email, theduluthrundown@gmail.com. Moving right along, trail conditions. What are you seeing out there, Tony?
Yeah, I've seen a handful of trails here recently, and they're just about ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah, even with the little, we're recording this on Sunday, the 24th, and you know, a little bit of rain last night.
Mm-hmm.
Still great for running right now.
No problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trails are great.
Yeah. I've seen a little bit of maybe overgrowth.
Yes, there has been that.
Yeah, especially, yeah. You know, up north a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see. I did run at Spirit Mountain yesterday on the Superior Hiking Trail, and optimal.
Yeah.
Just optimal.
Yeah. There's one spot that, now they've been great. There's one spot that isn't great and that I've seen, and that's that little snowmobile connector trail between Hawks Ridge Gravel Road and the Amity Creek Trail.
Mm.
It kind of just connects those two. That little trail, which is maybe, I don't know, 300-400 meters long, that's got some wet, muddy spots in it and some really tall grass.
Oh, yeah.
That it always kind of holds water, that area. It's very shady, and the grass is often pretty tall in there. And so, yeah. And there's these just kind of low, swampy spots.
Yeah.
Yeah, that part was not so great.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Huh. I think mostly we're looking pretty prime.
Really good, yeah.
Trail running.
Yep.
Totally. Trail conditions out there. So now's the time. You know, bugs are starting to die down and a couple trail races coming up here. So, yeah. Next segment that we have coming up is Coach's Corner. What do you got for the people this week?
Yes, this one, month here? And it might be a little bit shorter, but... I wanted to talk a little bit about nerves, pre-race nerves, particularly. I know that sometimes that can sort of be, I don't know, debilitating is probably a little strong, but people almost get nervous about their nerves, you know?
Right.
And I want to, if that's you, you know, I just want to encourage you to, you know, recognize that everyone has those nerves and it's okay. It's just a natural part of the whole deal of being nervous at a start line. It's nothing to feel bad about. It won't have a negative effect on your race, and it's just perfectly normal. And I think we've all experienced it for some races, maybe more so than others. If it's a bigger race or, you know, obviously your first race, but like, you know, just a bigger city marathon perhaps, or you know, who knows? There's a lot of reasons why you could get nervous.
Yeah.
But I think we've all experienced that. And then I think most people would agree that once the gun goes off, your mind is almost forgotten about the nerves.
Right.
And you're thinking about running and just letting all that happen. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, if that's happened to you, well, the same thing will happen again, you know? So yeah, maybe you're nervous on the start line, but know that, you know, once that gun goes off,
right,
just like before, or just like pretty much everybody else too, once that gun goes off, you know, the nerves are going to go away.
Yeah.
So, I used to tell people, I still tell people, you know, I'm glad when people are nervous, like some, you know, sometimes the kids will be nervous before the start of a high school race. And I tell them that's good, because if you're nervous, that means you care.
You know,
if you didn't care, you probably wouldn't be nervous and you'd just be a little more lackadaisical about it.
Yeah.
And not everybody is nervous. Some people are pretty chill by nature and that's totally fine.
Right.
But I would say most people are, and it's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. You can use that. You can sort of direct that energy and use it to create focus.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say. Like, I feel like it helps focus my energy, you know, just like get zoned in, locked in the zone, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
You know, versus like if I'm less nervous, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. Yeah, just like channel that nerves. I have a kind of a funny story actually about race nerves. This was earlier in my running history. I had done just a handful of races, one half marathon. I was set on the start line for my second half marathon. My mom gave me these caffeine chews, Coca-Cola flavored, and just a pack of them. Like, okay, I don't really know what to do. People eat, you eat these or whatever. I don't know. And I ate one, you know, okay, like, like only like 20 minutes for the race to start. Eat another, then I'm like nervously kind of eat the whole package on accident, you know, like, am I supposed to do that? I don't know. Well, that was a bad, bad move, because then just like these Coca-Cola flavored gummies were just in my stomach, and maybe the caffeine like was a little bubbly or something, but like it was a bad outcome. I'll put it that way. I threw up. Yeah, sorry. I don't know. It was too gross. I don't threw up. It was just not nice. Like totally unexpected. That that would happen.
I can see that.
Has even happened since. Like some really hard races, pushing my body to the limits.
But because you were kind of nervous, you were sort of like eating without paying attention that you were eating.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's how I feel. Just like this nervous energy. This is in my hand.
Yeah.
I'll just eat another one, you know? And probably, I mean, probably the just general nerves didn't help with the throw up either.
Potentially,
but it was not, it was not nice.
It may have almost been better. I mean, this is just hindsight. This isn't a criticism by any means, but it may have been better to just acknowledge the nerves rather than try to distract with eating.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. And it's okay or whatever. Yeah. Or like maybe I'm like chomping on these just because I don't know what else to do.
Yeah. But, right.
Yeah, that was a learning, good learning opportunity.
One thing that I used to do years ago, like early racing, is, and I'm not, I mean, I get nervous, but, and I have been for bigger races, but just your average little 5-10K or whatever, I would sit in my car as long, pretty much as long as I could, and I would like read a newspaper.
Oh,
this is back in the days of newspapers. And that sort of like calmed me down as I just, you know, I get my bib, I get all my stuff, I do a little warm-up jog or whatever, and then I would just kind of go and kind of just hang out in my car.
Oh, funny.
And just try to like chill before I had to go and maybe warm up again or something. But I tried to use that as a way to kind of just zone out a little bit.
Get the mind off.
Yeah, totally.
Funny. Yeah. I'd be curious to hear some other people's stories if you're listening and want to share race nerves, you know, what you go through. But yeah, that's interesting. And I think that's a good message. Just, it's okay. It's normal. It's kind of everyone.
Yeah. Yep.
Let's see. Next segment here, Root of the Week. I just have a Root of the Week that I've been loving so much, Tony.
Yeah.
I did talk about this last time to some extent, but now I've really like zeroed in on just the perfect route for me.
This is Root of the Month then.
Root of the Month. Yeah. I've been doing this almost like exactly the same. I feel like just I get into like this Root of the Month separate of the podcast and actually thinking of roots and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like I do it one time, like that was awesome.
Yeah.
And like I want to do it the next day. You know? It's like I'm just drawn to do the same loop. Anyways, I've been running from my house and I go big loop in Chester, and I can get almost like maybe 5 miles just in Chester without like really doubling back or just like zigzagging. I'm a big fan. I think it was maybe a couple of years ago they built hike specific trails near the ski trails, I think, to divert winter foot traffic off, you know.
Right.
And those actually make for some really nice loops, a lot of hills, so that's just like good for me, you know. I'm trying to train on the hills and then zip all the way down to Leif Erikson Park, jump in Lake Superior, especially on some of these humid days. It's just absolutely the best.
Yeah.
And then just zip on home from there. So
yeah,
it's about a 6 mile route for me. It's been perfect.
Leaving like wet footprints all the way up the hill.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I mean, I try to like dry my feet off a little bit, but like, yeah, it's like running in a diaper a little bit, like not the nicest.
Yeah, maybe not wet footprints, but wet trails.
Yeah. Drip marks for sure. Absolutely. Let's see. Thoughts on the run. What have you been thinking about out there on the roads?
So I've been waiting for this a little bit because this news broke like 2 days after our last podcast.
Yeah, okay.
I think is roughly two or three days. And so I haven't had a chance to talk about it, but it's a little bit dated, but I still want to talk about it. So if you recall back in October, The world record was set for the women's marathon, Ruth Chepngetich from Kenya. And we were kind of questioning it, and others were as well, that it was such an outlier. She broke the world record by a lot, 209 and change, and it was kind of like a real eye-opener and a jaw-dropper.
You're right.
And I kind of questioned potentially, like, yeah, it was it all on the up and up. You know, that it seems like a massive leap.
Yeah, and right.
Sure enough, 2 days after our podcast last July, she got busted for a masking agent, which is probably was covering up performance-enhancing drugs. So she has a two-year ban.
Yeah.
And the jury's still out on whether or not she's going to get a true doping suspension, and then therefore her record will be annulled. As of now, I believe her record still stands.
Yeah.
And it's unclear whether that's going to be changed or not.
Yeah, yeah. That's my main, like, my first question is, like, to what extent does that, you know, what, 9 months later, 10 months later, like, negate the actual performance, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the rules state that that should, but there's some like gray area on like,
yeah,
is it a drug suspension? You know, she got busted for these masking agents, and so right. I don't know if they have to continue to test the blood or the urine or whatever they have. I'm not sure how it all works. It's the whole doping thing it's pretty complicated and detailed.
Yeah,
but my hope would be that they would take that record away from her.
And, like, why 10 months later? Like, was this a recent test that just recently, like, all of a sudden, now you have?
Yeah, I think, I think it takes a long time. I think, and then they'll test, you know, often, obviously, right after the race, yes, but then I think they come back and test again later. And
interesting.
Yeah.
And so that's almost like, well, if you have a masking agent, you know, then therefore you must be trying to mask something there. And it's probably there are a lot of assumptions with this.
Yes.
Right. Like it is several different assumptions of like you were cheating at Chicago.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so complicated.
It is complicated, but to me, like, everything still points more and more now to drugs, right?
Right.
If you have why would you have a masking agent, all the heavy doses of this masking agent, if not for performance-enhancing drugs?
Right.
And the sad thing is then that person who came in second place missed out on all of the benefits that come with winning a world major marathon.
Right.
And they won't ever be able to get that back.
Right. Even if they're listed as the first place finisher because they erased
Ruth's
time.
Right.
I mean, yeah, that's different than being on the podium, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Being on the podium and getting, so much. It costs people thousands and thousands of dollars when they don't win when they should have won.
And especially, you know, like a sport like running where it's not like the NBA or NFL or, you know, you're not making hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
Yeah. Like that could affect someone's whole career trajectory. Right?
Yeah.
That second place person.
Yeah. I believe if you win Chicago Marathon, I think it's $500,000.
Dang.
Yeah.
But then like shoe deal.
Yeah. What if it was like all the other benefits that come with it. Right. Yeah.
You kind of called it.
It just shows like when you see a performance like that, that's out of the blue,
right?
From someone who hasn't really done that before, you just have to question. It's sad, but you just kind of have to.
Yeah,
especially with the way that professional sports work now, endurance sports.
Right. Like in the 70s, when it's like maybe some no name who's been training in the woods.
Yeah,
forever.
Yeah. Right. Know? Exactly.
But not in this day and age.
You know, along those lines, I really have a ton of respect for any professional athlete that puts all of their training out there on the internet for the world to see, like Strava and YouTube and all that stuff. Not all of them do, and a lot of them don't.
Right.
But some of them do, and I think that's super cool to just say, here it is, because they want it to be sort of secretive. They don't want their competitors to see what they're doing. That's obviously one reason why.
Yeah.
Another reason might not be so honorable. But when people do, you kind of just feel like you can trust them.
You're right.
More so.
Like, yeah, okay, they certainly appear to be running 130 mile weeks.
Yeah, and then you can see like the big work the that they do, and it's like,
yeah,
man, those people are awesome.
But that's an interesting topic as well, because like Ruth, to run a massively like world record, like yeah. extraordinarily fast time at the marathon.
Yeah.
Like she had to put in the work like that.
Yeah.
But she was did. Just like, yeah. so she potentially was doing 150 mile weeks and just insane workouts, mm-hmm. but also doping that whole time. Right. Potentially.
Yeah.
So like, I guess just to, like that wouldn't necessarily like, oh, they're running 40 miles a week and then whip out a 205 or something.
Correct. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I see what you mean, though. It is kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's the answer here? Just yeah. better doping tech?
Don't do monitoring. Drugs. Yeah. That's the answer.
Yeah.
Don't take performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Well, it's an interesting topic of conversation anyways, just with the nuance.
Yeah.
With it all, you yep. know?
Yeah.
Hopefully they get it resolved, you know, and... I don't know. What is next here? We got a couple shout outs. I'm going to hijack your. I know you have a couple shout outs. I want to shout out you and hear a little bit about Day Across Minnesota. You said it was very hard.
Yeah, this year was tough. It was so much more difficult than last year's with our big tailwind that we had. The hard part this year was the gravel.
Oh.
So. My understanding is they had a lot of rain down there. And so what'll happen when that occurs, those gravel roads, those gravel roads get used a lot more down in the farm country because there's farmers.
Right.
And that's how they get at their fields. So trucks and tractors and combines and all this stuff constantly.
Machinery.
So what they do is they grade them far more often and they put down fresh gravel far more often, also because they have a lot of gravel available. So the counties are responsible for these giant grids of gravel roads, miles and miles and miles and miles. And the gravel down there is much looser and thicker than our gravel. Our gravel is Hero gravel or Champagne gravel. It's like smooth. You could ride that road bike over there in the corner, Mike, and you'd be fine on our gravel.
Just
95% of it
packed.
You couldn't ride that on that stuff down there. And so they had a lot of rain apparently. And so the first 140 miles were like fresh and newly graded gravel. It was so hard.
Loose
and thick and soft and trying to find a line. There were times when I was clear on the left edge of the road.
Yeah.
Riding just to find any kind. So you're riding on the quote unquote wrong side of the road.
Yeah.
But just to find a line to somewhat give you some sort of like go, you know, because otherwise you're just sinking and it's pushing through that thick.
Yeah.
It was so hard. And then we had like a subtle kind of headwind / crosswind for the second half-ish of the race. It was tough, but the weather, the temperatures was good. The temperature was fine. Wasn't overly hot by any means, but
yeah.
And then one other thing too that happened to me personally, when we started at night, as you know, it's night start,
midnight.
Yeah, midnight start, and you're on gravel like right away. And like we said, you know, super dusty and soft and sandy. And it was crazy humid. And so right away, you're at night, and you're packed up because it's early. My glasses kind of developed this film where a little moisture was kind of on the glasses, and then the gravel dust created all this this crazy haze on my glasses, and everything was just getting more blurry and more blurry.
Yeah.
The first, like, 15 minutes.
Oh boy.
So I had no choice, but I had to take my glasses off.
Oh boy.
And just to see.
You're right.
So, now great. I can see better now, but my eyes, Mike, like the whites of my eyes were truly red, like solid red
because
it was just gravel dust for hours and hours. And my water bottles, like the little drink nozzle, it was like mud. On the drink nozzle because you know, it'd be a little wet after drinking.
You're right.
And then all the dust would collect on that wetness.
Yeah.
And I would have to just like wipe off the gravel mud with my thumb or off the side of my bibs.
Yeah.
To otherwise I was just drinking like mud. It was so bad.
Oh gosh.
But my eyes, you should have seen them. They were terrible. It was weird.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, plus just this midnight start, like sleep, you know, middle of the night.
Totally. Your body's not used to that.
Eyes open for that long, you know?
Yeah.
Ugh.
I know. I remember like taking these on, like, this is not going to be good, but I have to be able to see.
Right. Right.
And so I got to Henderson, and that was the first time I saw Gretchen. I didn't have an aid until Henderson, which was like mile 150.
150, like.
Yeah. And she was like, oh my gosh, your eyes are bleeding. I'm like, yeah, well, here's why. And blah, blah, blah. So she like was rinsing them out with like water.
Yeah.
And I could feel little pebbles like draining out, tiny little pebbles draining out of my eye as it was happening.
Wow.
Yeah.
The eye doctors listening are cringing right now.
Oh, man. I have a picture I'll show you after. It's nasty.
Wow. Wow. Well, big congratulations. I know probably maybe the two spectrums in terms of bike choice, single speed steel, and then one last year, and then this year, carbon superbike.
Yeah.
Gears.
The big thing that why this one gears and the faster bike, why this one was better was because of the gravel. Cause I had a wider tire, my old bike. I could probably squeeze a 40 in there. 38. So it's spec to like, that's the max width.
Right.
I would have sunk down. It would have been, it would have been brutal, especially single speed. That would have been, I don't know. I mean, who knows if I would have finished, but it would have been so hard. But luckily I was able to get with my bike, I can get pretty wide tires on there.
Okay.
And that helped because I could kind of float a little bit better compared to a 38.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just if it's super loose, shift down.
Yeah, exactly.
Easy pedaling.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah. I'm glad I had that bike for sure. Actually, my ride time was faster, but my total time was slower.
Huh.
If that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
Because I took more breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, big shout out to you, Tony. Congratulations. I mean, that's a mean scary race.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm gonna go do it again next year, I think.
For real?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
Yeah, I gotta get a little revenge.
Yeah,
hopefully it's not like that next year.
Maybe like revenge would just be like not doing it, you know, like that's the revenge.
No, that's a white flag.
Wow. Well, fun. I know you had a couple shout outs too. Who are you looking to highlight?
Yeah, two shout outs. People that we've shouted out before, but you know, these are friends of ours, and so we see what they do, and they're always doing stuff. But one, just sticking with the gravel with the bike thing, but Nick Nygaard, who raced Leadville 100 mountain bike race a couple of weeks ago and came in fourth in the general population category. Just a killer performance.
Wow.
So impressed. I'm still kind of just like, wow, that was amazing.
Yeah.
To come out here as a, you know, flatlander, to go out there and as a flatlander and race at Leadville, which that town starts at 10,000 feet.
Right.
And then, yeah.
It's like, is there a more competitive mountain bike race?
No.
For the general public? Like, I don't know.
Not in the U.S. Maybe a couple of things in Europe, and there's one in South Africa. I think that's pretty competitive. But, Leadville is like Western states.
Right.
Leadville is the one.
Wow.
Yeah. So super impressive.
That's insane.
And then also to Tiffany, who's been just kind of crushing it lately with U.S. Nationals and the triathlon and Milwaukee and the state championships just yesterday. Just had a really nice year, and she just continues to make improvements and get faster. So shout out to Tiff as well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice work, Tiff. Nice work, Nick. Hey, if you have a shout out out there, if you're listening, one of your friends or even yourself want to do a little self-promotion, send us an email. We'd love to do shout-outs for good race performances or really just anything running related if you're a local Duluth runner. So send us some info there. But other than that, I think that about wraps up our rundown. Tony, what do you say?
Yeah, should we get to the interview portion?
Yeah, let's do it.